Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our February webinar and podcast episode. Just a quick reminder, as I always do, on asking questions. If you're joining us live, you have the opportunity to ask a question at any time. Just use the Q&A function on your Zoom control panel and we'll get that answered for you at the end of the session. If you're viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, feel free to contact us directly at smithinc.com. Now going to hand over to David Smith, Smith Inc. Director, to present his session on team structure. Over to you, David.
Thanks, Andrea, and good morning, good afternoon to you all, especially those of you in Victoria. I hope you're surviving another difficult time, so and you can get through that and we can all hopefully see each other again at some point if this vaccine ever works. I've found over the years that one of the most emotional topics that you can actually have in the accounting industry is a debate around team structure. So I thought I'd jump straight in there and go through this topic, which will probably, some of you will probably get annoyed with me. Others of you might agree with me, but in the end, we can at least have the debate and consider the different ways of structuring a firm. So in my mind, there are three main structures that firms use to organise themselves. And I thought I'd go through each of these structures and really look at the pros and cons of each. And I think it'll probably be fairly clear by the time I get to the end, which is the structure that I prefer. The first structure is a pooling structure, which a lot of firms have, which basically says that you've got a whole lot of team members. There is work that comes in to the partners and managers, and that work can be allocated to essentially any team member. And the partners and managers together sort of manage the workflow, work out where there's capacity shortages or surpluses and move work around as it needs to be worked around. In this type of structure, percentage productivity tends to be one of the key KPIs, although turnaround time can also work as a bit of a KPI as well for this structure. So some of you might have that particular structure. Many firms move to this structure when they've been in the next structure I'm going to talk about, which is a silo structure, because they some of the disadvantages of the silo structure they want to overcome by trying to create a more sense of team by having a pool of people working together. And that makes sense, but I think there's some drawbacks here as well. So let's just have a look at the advantages and disadvantages of a pool structure. A key advantage, and one of the things when we've been talking to team members, is they like the ability to work with different people, different partners, different managers, see how they interact with clients, see how they go about their work, because it's great experience to work with different people. So a pool structure creates that opportunity, so I can work with different people. So that is one of the advantages. Another advantage, which is why some partners like this type of structure, is that all the resources are essentially available. So you've got work coming in, you've got the entire team that is potentially available to do the work. Work can be placed with a team member with the right level of experience, because again, all of the resources available, so you can say this type of job needs this level, and you can generally find that available. It does also enable team members to work on the same jobs potentially for longer periods. Whilst I've got that in advantages, it's also a bit of a disadvantage that having people working on the same job forever is probably not good for them. It might be good for the firm, but in the end, it may not be good for the team member as they want to move up and increase their experience, take on more challenging and interesting work, for instance. Because you're in a pool structure, you're sort of forced to have a some level of process consistency, and that's a big advantage. So as you move stuff around, move work around the business, you can be pretty sure it's done the same way. And if you've been good about setting up your processes, you've then got some assurance that those processes are being followed. However, I think there's some fairly significant disadvantages in this pool structure as well. And the first disadvantage, which is very often reported to me when I do research and discuss with team members about how they're feeling about their role in the firm, and that is that they can feel a bit lost in this structure, that they don't have a close relationship with any particular manager necessarily. Some firms try and compensate for that problem by having like a mentor program to try and deal with that. But it is a common theme that team members can feel a bit lost. It's also difficult to create a great sense of accountability because work is sort of going from, you know, partner down to team member. And it's hard for the managers to be accountable for how those team members are performing when the work's sort of going all over the place a bit. Also found that, you know, what can happen in these types of structures as well is that the really top-level performers are in demand, and people want those top-level performers doing their work while the weaker team members sometimes are not given attention and may run out of work. So that can be something which can, for some team members, be somewhat frustrating. The workflow management is complex in this world as well. It's hard for anybody to have a complete handle on who's doing what. You do need to be using a good workflow management system. Unfortunately, none of the suppliers have a great workflow management system. Ever since BankLeak Workflow Manager disappeared, there hasn't been a decent workflow management system really around anymore. MYOBs is not bad from a reporting perspective, but it's not very well. It doesn't do at all the sort of like budgeting perspective. What a lot of firms do in terms of the whole workflow management piece is that many firms try and manage this on spreadsheets because that's really the only alternative which many of them think is left to try and do this type of management. There are companies such as FuseWorks in Brisbane which try to build workflow management systems which integrate in with MYOB and APS and others. And so if you're interested in that, definitely have a chat with FuseWorks perhaps. Conflicting priorities is another issue here that, you know, the team members working on job A, a partner comes in with job B, yells and screams and says they want their job done. So team member sort of feels as though they've now got to drop job A to do job B, because he who screams the loudest, he or she who screams the loudest quite often wins. And so you can have that type of challenging situation as well, that it's very hard to get a good sense around priority. So whilst the structure clearly works, I think that the disadvantages clearly outweigh the advantages in this world, and perhaps we need to think about whether there's a better way. So that's traditional structure one. Traditional structure two, which again would be familiar to many of you, is the siloed structure. So the siloed structure basically sits as a partner or director with their own manager, and then they've got their own mini team, essentially. I must say that the vast majority of partners and managers tend to like this structure. And that's because it gives them sort of complete control of what's happening with their team, and you know they know exactly what's going on. And that's all true. You know, the allocation of work is simpler. The management of workflow is a bit simpler. And you can have some team-based KPIs here, but it can be difficult to keep the manager accountable, and I'll come to that in a moment, unless you have a very, very strong discipline in how the partner works with the team. So let's have a bit of a look at the advantages and disadvantages of the siloed structure. So partners with their manager have direct control over workflow. That gives the partner the director and the manager good confidence that they're going to be able to deliver the work when they might have made a promise to a client, for instance. The consistency of team members working on jobs year in, year out, that can be achieved through this structure as well. Because it's a smaller team, the manager can have stronger relationships with the team. And I think what I've seen with people running these types of structures, it is better from a HR management perspective, a training perspective, with running the smaller team that a manager is dealing with. People don't feel as lost. You can build and manage team-based KPIs because you've got this team and you can give KPIs to the team. And I like that. I believe that there should be team-based KPIs in a firm, and those KPIs should be, you know, I think a team should have a billings budget, for instance, a write-offs budget, which obviously should be zero or negative, and what I'll call a production budget, excuse me, which is dollars going into WIP, and potentially other KPIs like turnaround time, like referrals to financial planning and other things like that. There's a variety of KPIs that can be created that the manager is responsible for, and you can do that in this sort of siloed structure. And priority conflicts should be less because the partner and manager, you know what's coming in and can manage those conflicts rather than a pooled structure where it's more difficult to know what else is happening in the firm. So what's the disadvantages of this? I think one of the really big disadvantages is the inconsistency of process. In so many firms that run siloed structures, it seems it's more often the case that processes are inconsistent across teams. That creates two problems in my mind. The first problem is are we achieving the quality standards that we have set out to achieve, which by designing the processes in a certain way, that's one of the outcomes that you want to achieve, which is achieving a relatively high quality process. So I think that's challenge one. Challenge two, the second issue associated with that is that if your processes should have been honed to be highly efficient, and if you've got people who are not following those processes, then we might have cost overruns associated with that. If you can hear noise in the background, I apologise. I'm coming to you from my home in Port Stephens, and Williamtown RAAF is about 10 minutes away, and they're playing with their their F-35 Joint Strike Fighter at the moment, I think. Second disadvantage is can be difficult to manage resources, shortfalls and surpluses across the team. So if you've got this siloed team and you've got too much work coming in, you need to be able to go to another team and say, I need you to do some work for me. And that might require a level of negotiation with the partner and or manager of that other team. And depending on their own workflow, you can end up with a bit of an issue with being able to manage that. Another important point from the team member's perspective is that if they're in a siloed structure, they're working with the same partner and manager and not getting experience working for different people. And for many team members, they'd prefer to get a little bit of experience of working with others to see different ways of working, different ways of engaging. Career progression's more difficult too, because you can get sort of stuck in the team structure, and it's harder to move up and harder to move across. And so if there was another structure, one of the advantages of the pool structure is you can sort of probably move up easier because there's a greater bulk of people and stars can stand out and sort of go further up in because it's a broader group that you're talking about. It's a bit harder in the siloed structure. I've noticed as well that it can lead to a divisive culture where groups are not talking to each other and not engaging with each other. And so that, and particularly if processes are not followed, that can create some division in the firm. And in many firms that I've been involved with who have dismantled siloed structures, it's partly because of the cultural aspect where they want to create more of a one firm feel about the place, and dismantling the siloed structure was one of the reasons to do that. And yeah, one of the other disadvantages of siloed structures is partners and directors can feel that they have complete control over the structure, and in many cases they will bypass the manager and go and direct team members directly and allocate work to them directly. And as soon as you do that, you can't make the manager accountable anymore because they've lost control over the workflow. And in any of these structures, I would say that if you want to make the managers accountable, you've got to stop partners and directors bypassing them and allocating work directly to team members, because you can't make them accountable in that basis. Which brings me to the third structure, which is, in fact, my preferred structure, which is really a variation on the siloed structure, but takes away many of the disadvantages of the siloed structure. So it's still a small team, similar to the siloed structure, but that small team works essentially for every partner. The small team has its own client list. And where I think this really comes into its own is that you have a conversation with the clients and say to the clients, there are two people that are your primary relationship people in the firm. You have a compliance relationship manager, which in this structure is the client services manager, and you have an advisory relationship manager, which in most cases might be the partner or the director. The power of doing it that way is that you're actually taking the compliance effort away from the partner slash director and giving them more opportunity to develop other work and not be involved in that day-to-day compliance. So each team does work for all partners. So that means team members are getting experience working for other people. You still get consistency because the clients are allocated into the teams, so they know what clients they'll be working on. I do believe in this structure as well that we should be putting an admin person into the teams, and I'll come to that a little bit later on. And the other point, which is really important here, is that this type of structure has one really interesting benefit, is when as the firm is growing, you don't need to change much in the firm. You just keep adding these teams. Because they're working for all partners, it doesn't matter where the growth is coming from. You just keep adding these teams. The other thing that you could ponder with this structure as well is that these teams don't necessarily need to be the same. So you could have a team which concentrates on small, simple clients. Maybe a less experienced team person, a team member might be the manager of that team. You might have another team that concentrates on large, complex, risky clients. You might have a team that concentrates on maybe on SMSF. You might have a team that concentrates on a particular industry, perhaps. So you can then create these sort of semi-specializations within this team structure, and it continues to operate. In this world, a partner is not involved in the workflow. A partner and director, their job is to do reviews of complex work, engage with the clients, mentor and coach the managers and the team, and provide technical advice where necessary. So let's have a quick look at what I think are the advantages and disadvantages of this structure. Managers have direct control over the workflow, and that's critical to make certain that we're scheduling work and we know when the work's going to come in. We can get the work done on time and we can turn it around quickly and give our clients certainty around delivery. Consistency of team members working on jobs year by year because the clients are allocated to the team. Manager can have a stronger relationship with team, nice small team, so they can build those relationships. Able to build and manage team-based KPIs and keep the managers accountable, because under this structure, the partners and directors cannot bypass the manager. The work has to go through the manager, and that way you can keep the manager accountable. Managers deal with each other. Managers firstly deal with the partner if there's a priority conflict, deal with the partners, or deal with the other managers. Managers deal with the resource shortfalls and surpluses. So in most firms, the managers of these teams would meet once a week and talk about any resource shortages or surpluses that they may have, and where there's an opportunity perhaps to share a little bit of work around to deal with those resource shortfalls or surpluses. Because these teams are working for all partners or directors, that will go a long way towards achieving process consistency, because the work has to be done the same way. It allows career progression for stars, because I might be a star performer and my next level might be to be a team leader for a small client's team. And then I might be able to move from there to a specialty team, or I might be able to move to a complex client's team, so I can move myself through the structure as a way of getting a progression. Team members get experience for working for different partners, which is what team members would like, and that's good for their own personal development. And partners are freed up and don't have to deal with the workflow issues that are being dealt with by the managers. The disadvantages is the partners have to get used to the fact that they're dealing with multiple managers. They don't have the manager sitting in their corner they can just dump stuff at. They've got to think about this client, that manager, and I'll go and talk to them about that issue. So it does make the partner's life a little bit more complex to manage that. But partners, you know, are only a small percentage of the overall number of people in the firm. So we've got to think firm-wide. Partners can't delegate directly to team members. As I said, accountability disappears if you do that, and sharing team members can be more difficult in this structure. As I've said, I think support team members should be part of the small teams. Each small team should have its own support team member, and they essentially become the PA for the team lead, and they do all of the non-accounting work for the team. That creates a better sense of ownership. You know, one of the great challenges when firms have a separate admin group is that sometimes they feel like third-class citizens. And by implementing this team, this structure where they're involved in part of the team, they get a much better involvement. Now, I've got a couple of slides here about what is the role of the team lead. And I'll try and go through this very quickly because I don't have a huge amount of time. But they should be responsible for the resource plans for the pod. At some point, I'll do another webinar about resource planning. I think it's a fundamental thing of what every firm needs to do. They manage the workflow. They liaise with the other pod leaders when resources need to be shared. They manage the budgets for team members, and I'll come to that in a second. They manage the team members day to day to see that they're staying on track and dealing with their issues. They set the firm's financial and non-financial targets for their team. They will recommend that to the directors, and then they manage the pod to meet the budgets that have been set. They mentor and coach the team members. They ensure that the team complies with the processes and policies of the firm, deal with any issues the team members have, so there's a close relationship with team members, being able to talk to them to deal with issues, make recommendations for training, and report issues to senior management if there's anything to do with pod performance. So the manager really here is empowered to run their own little business group, really, is what this is trying to say. And the firms that have implemented this structure, I've got to say, the team leaders love it. They've got that ability to run their own mini business in a sense. They're dealing with multiple partners. They've got a small team that they can mentor and coach, and they've got clear KPIs that they're trying to meet. Now, one of the challenges of the small team structure can be quality control, and so I would then implement with this peer reviewing, where some files are picked up by one team lead from another team lead, and they're then peer reviewed to make certain that the processes are being followed. And I think you should also have some client satisfaction surveys running to make certain that what we're delivering is satisfying the clients. So you need some checking to make certain. Doesn't really matter what structure you've got to have to have something like this in place. Now, I should have said as well, when I said that these small teams are not the same, they can be quite different. There were some questions submitted around offshoring. So the firms that run the types of structures that I'm talking about, these small team structures, the offshoring teams essentially become just another team that are in the same, with the same type of structure. So it doesn't matter whether the team is in the office or somewhere else, it's just another small team. Now, because they're offshoring and there's cultural issues and language issues and those sorts of things, there'll need to be an onshore liaison person with that team to ensure that they stay on track. But the idea of having a similar structure of an offshore team being a small team, the same as the onshore teams being a small team, I think that what works. Now, when you come down to individuals in a firm, the team members, the accountants doing the work, and I know many firms are using percentage productivity as the main KPI that they use to look at performance of those people. I don't like that at all, and I don't think it should be used. The way that I think it needs to be done is that every job given to a team member before they start work, they've got to be told two things. This should take you X number of hours, and those hours are not generated from the projected fee. It's a clear assessment for that team member with the skills they've got, how many hours it should take and what the completion deadline is. So that needs to be instructed to the team member before the work is started. And then the most critical component is that the team member is not able to either blow the hours budget or miss that deadline unless they have come to their manager and warned them that there is a problem. Because what you want to do is try and pick up problems before they happen. You know, they might have been given poor instructions. The information coming from the client was a mess. They might be doing too much work. They might be doing wrong work. You need to find that out really early. And so you've got to put it on the team member to ring the bell when they have a problem with getting with meeting the hours budget or the completion deadline. If you're running, if a manager is running a small team, their job is to talk to every team member every day. And one of the questions they need to ask is, which jobs are you going to miss the hours budget on, and which jobs will you miss the deadline on? So it's something that is reflected upon every day. How you then get productivity out of these people is you just fill them up with work. So you know how many hours they've been allocated of work. You fill them up with work. You get the percentage productivity. So you don't need to directly manage percentage productivity per se. You give them this work, and for them, it is much easier to relate to. I've got this job and I've got 6 hours to do it is much easier to relate to than saying I've got to hit, you know, 80% percentage productivity or whatever the number is. So I've gone slightly over. I've done that incredibly quickly. I hope that that's been a bit of a help to you. More than happy to engage with any of you if you want to talk further about it. But I do think that a bit of thinking about your team structure can make a huge difference in your firm. And looking at that small team structure might just be the ticket to change your culture a bit, improve performance and improve accountability. So, Andrea, we're a little bit past our time. Perhaps we can take some questions.
Great. Thanks, David. There are a few that have been coming through. So we'll get through.
I'm not surprised.
Yes. We'll get through what we can. You just let me know. First one came in from John reasonably early. We are aiming to implement APS workflow. Do you have a view of this product or its implementation?
I think it's okay. However, this is probably more a generic answer about workflow more generally. I think the biggest mistake people make in implementing workflow systems is that they get too granular and they try and break it down into tasks and all sorts of, you know, granular components. I think, and I think the firms that try and do that, they end up in a god-awful mess. And the cost of maintaining it and keeping up to date is so painful that they give up. So as far as I'm concerned, if a job is a client group, so mum, dad, the dog and the cat and the trust and the super fund and the partnership and company and whatever it may be, that's a job, because generally it's all done together. The only one which might be separate could be the SMSF perhaps, but it's one job. So you have that one job and you say to do that one job, that client group is 16 hours. And that's what I would put into the APS workflow. It's got one task and the task is do the job and you've got 16 hours to do it. And then you can manage to that because you're not trying to manage all the subtasks. You're just managing at a high level.
Great. Thanks, David. John's next question came in when you were talking about the small team structure. I'm pretty sure. Correct me if I'm wrong, John. Is the client service manager the traditional manager in this structure?
Yes. And the only reason why I've sort of semi-caveat is that generally that's the case. Generally, the existing managers become the team manager. However, sometimes some of those more senior people are hopeless team managers. They're really technocrats and love getting in, you know, love reading the Tax Act and all that sort of stuff, and don't really like dealing with team. So there is nothing to stop you having a team member in a small team that's actually more junior to the team lead, because the team lead is probably maybe better at engaging with clients, better than engaging with teams. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's always the case, but it's fair to say it's the most often seen situation.
Okay. The next one, the next few are all on that same structure. How's this structure work for career progression?
Well, as I said, because these small teams are not necessarily generic, you can have different small teams doing different things, like a small team doing with small, simple clients, cafes and the like, other teams doing more complex work with builders and those types of industries, I can start in, a small, simple team, and that might be where I start when I'm a youngster and I'm learning the ropes doing very small, simple clients. And I could progress through that team and even potentially become the team lead. And then from there, I could then jump across to another team with maybe a specialty, or maybe doing more complex work, or maybe it could be a business advisory team. So all these teams could be, could have these different specialties, and I can move across to that. So I could do these sideways movements as I move up the firm. And as a general principle, that has sort of worked in most of the firms I've been involved with.
Okay, good. Thanks, David. What is your perfect team small? What is your perfect small team member number?
About five, I reckon. It just depends. You've got to sit there with a whiteboard and say, this is our firm, this is the people we've got, and sort of try and map it out. So, I think if you're less than four, it doesn't really work properly. And more than six or seven is probably too many. So around five or six, I think, is about right. At the end of the day, you're probably trying to get a fee base of about $1 million through a team.
Okay. Would the partners have their own PAs as well?
Interesting question. It depends on them. The most common thing that I would see in that situation is that they tend to share a PA for the partners, and they have a specific PA who does partner stuff for them. Some firms have a variant that while there is an admin person sitting in a small team, they have a secondary role of being a PA for one or two partners. So I've seen that as well. It really comes down to the individual partners or directors on how well they use PAs, because some are very independent these days and don't really need one. So you just need to look at the circumstances in the firm. So personally, I think if you're a three or four partner firm, having a PA that's shared across all of those could well be the right answer.
Okay, great. John has asked, team leaders, what's to prevent little Hitlers or little thieves who walk away with clients and team members?
I go back to what I said. I'll come to team members in a second, but with clients, remember that I said that every client has two relationships. There is a compliance relationship, which is more often than not the team lead would probably be the compliance relationship. But then there is an advisory relationship, which is more often than not going to be the partner and director. So under that structure, you've still got strong engagement between the partner and director and the client. If they're doing their job well, the client will generally value that advisory work far more than they'll value the compliance work, and that senior relationship probably works. That said, I do acknowledge and I encourage a work to be delegated down to managers. And yes, there's always a risk that if the manager is the sole person with the relationship with the client, they can take the client. And mind you, that's equal in every structure that I was talking about, that risk applies. And I think that's why it's always incumbent, I think, upon the firm to ensure that a client has relationship with two people in the firm. When it comes to staff, I think the most important thing is that, yes, again, a manager could try and poach the staff, but if you've got a structure where it's quite clear that there are opportunities created by the structure for team members to move up through the structure, and particularly if I'm a star, because it's the stars that we really worry about here, that you've got a way of fast tracking the stars through the structure by giving them different opportunities because the teams are not necessarily the same, I think you'll find that team members will be more encouraged to stay because they'll see the benefit of it.
Great, thanks, David. I think there's just one more. In your small team structure, does the team manager do the billing?
Well, the bill, in my mind, and this is regardless of structure, the draft bill needs to be done by the team member. And I encourage them to come up with the dollars as well, that they do the entire draft, and that is then reviewed by the manager. And it again tends, it depends on how, on the type of client. So there'll be, what I'd suggest is, if clients up to a certain dollar amount, the manager will just do the bills themselves, and the larger clients is where the, maybe the partner and the slash director might be the people who would focus upon that. But all the draft bills are done by the team members. And the reason why I think that is critical is that the team members are at the coalface, know that the pain of the work that they've had to deal with, know all of the extra bits and bobs that they had to do, and they can put that in a bill. And sure, at review stage, you might strike some of that stuff out, but it means that the manager or partner doing the review of that bill have got all the detail to make a proper assessment as to what is the right thing to do.
Great, thanks, David. We are pretty much up. Oh, there's a couple more coming through. Yes, a recording will be coming through. And I know a couple of people did raise their hands. Because we're up on time, I would suggest just emailing if you do have any further questions through, and David will get back to you. The recording will be emailed to everybody this afternoon, along with a copy of David's slides. It's a great topic. Thanks, David, for presenting, and thanks, everyone, for attending today.
Thanks, Andrea. I know it's a fairly complex topic to try and do in half an hour, so if any of you do want to have a bit of an extra conversation about it, I'm more than happy to have a quick chat.
Great. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for the comments coming through. Great session. Thanks, David. Food for thought. Lots of great feedback. So just be in touch if you would like to go through anything in more detail. Thanks, okay. Everybody.
Thank you all. See ya.